And this morning, I just wanted to encourage you to grab one of these if you didn't already, because it is full of a lot of important information. And let me highlight a couple of things. They're up at the top. One of them is the fact that you may or may not know there's a bilingual church that meets in this building at 1 o'clock called Alas Conexión. They started this last Easter. And one of the ways that they have expressed to us, one of the ways that we can be supportive to them here at this moment in time, is to show up in their worship service. Kind of that simple. When they first were getting started, we provided childcare for them and did some greeting and other things. But they're saying to us now, hey, you know what? We just need some more bodies. We just need a little bit more energy in our worship space. And so is there anybody from the branch that could come? And so next week, Sunday, and the following week, we're going to invite, and we're inviting everyone who would like to stay after, have lunch here with some other branch people. So it's kind of a nice opportunity to connect with some branch folks that you may or may not know well, and then join Alas for worship and just go. That's all you have to do is just show up. And I think if you do, not only will it be a gift to them, I think it will be a gift to you. I think if you have not been in a worship gathering that's much different than kind of what we do here, you would be good to go. Because it will remind you that what we do here is just a small piece of the pie, you know, when you think about the kingdom and what's happening around the world. So connect with people, have some lunch, hang out with Alas. We want to invite you to do that. And then the other thing to just mention is that we hear from a lot of people, especially lately it seems, that when it comes to giving here at the branch, you're telling us that you no longer use checks, and I don't understand that. I mean, doesn't everyone use checks for everything still? We forget our checkbook, or this is the only place where we write a check to anymore, you know? And so we kind of woke up and realized that it might be helpful to add another way to give here. And if you're feeling really savvy, you can actually just scan the QR code here in the bulletin and connect right to it and do it today. But there's lots of information on the back. So maybe you have questions. How does this work? You know, are they going to steal my identity? Those sorts of things. You can check all that out on that back table. We would love to make that available. All right. Enough announcements. We're nearing the end. We have a couple weeks left in a series that we're calling Consumed. And I want to show a commercial to kick off this morning. It's actually one that I showed in the first week that we of the series when we kind of began this conversation. And I want you to listen to the words really carefully. This is just like a 20-second clip. It's a commercial that's been playing recently. I've edited it so that you can't figure out what company it belongs to, but because that's not really the point. The point is the message that's being portrayed in this commercial. So listen carefully to the words. Let's watch it together. Did you catch all that? I know it's real quick and kind of fading in and out, but the key line in there is, all we really want is more. More data, more wireless coverage. That's what this commercial would be telling you you want more of and need more of. But it expands well beyond that, does it not? We're told over and over again that we want, no, we need more. And if we can just get more of whatever it is that you would fill in the blank, you know, whatever more means to you, if we could just get more, then we would finally have what we're longing for. The thing that we've been talking about in this series, though, is that more, whatever it is for you, never satisfies. More never satisfies. It does give us a taste of the things we're after. Sometimes when you do get more of that thing that you are longing for and want and think will make your life better, it does bring some measure of joy, happiness, contentment, peace. There is a taste that we get from more. But in the end, it doesn't fill us up. It leaves us hungry. And so guess what we do? We tell ourselves, being hungry, that we just need more. And we go chasing again. And so if more never delivers on its promise, if it never fills us up, then the question we've been considering is, what does it mean? What does life look like if we're not consumed by more? How do we live in a new direction? How do we follow Jesus when it comes to stuff like money and the things that it buys? And so today I want to look at two stories from the Bible that I think talk about two movements of our heart, and I'm going to suggest two disciplines. So, I don't know, it should make you pretty happy. That's like not four things. It's just two today. Just lots of twos. Should be pretty simple and pretty painless, although maybe not. All right, so two stories, two movements, two disciplines. The first story is in Luke 19. If you want, you can turn there, or you can just listen. That's fantastic as well. But in Luke 19, Jesus meets a guy by the name of Zacchaeus. Anybody sing this song growing up? Zacchaeus was a wee little man. Yeah, I love that song. Okay, anyway, we were on a hayride. This is totally random. We were on a hayride at a campground, and this is when I was like, I don't know, a young kid, under 10. And on this hayride, the person leading it was asking everybody, you know, hey, what songs do you want to sing? And kids were shouting out like popular songs that were popular to the common culture. And I got the courage enough to say, Zacchaeus. And the woman looks at me and says, what song is that? You know, well, Zacchaeus was a wee little. She's like, I don't know that song. Next, anyone? And that was like a heartbreak. So Zacchaeus has always had a soft place in my heart. Random. Okay, Luke 19. I gave you time to find it, if nothing else. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. He wanted to see who Jesus was, but because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, come down. Immediately, I must stay at your house today. So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. All the people saw this and began to mutter, he's going to be the guest of a sinner. But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, look, Lord, here and now, right now I give half of my possessions to the poor. And if I've cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount. And Jesus said to him, today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. So Zacchaeus is a chief tax collector. Not some entry-level tax collector. This guy has climbed the ladder, all right? And no surprise, he's wealthy. Now, the reason he's wealthy is because tax collectors extorted people. Do you know how these folks functioned in society? Rome hired tax collectors to collect tax, as the name would imply. And let's say Rome had a 10% tax. The tax collectors might collect 11%, maybe 12%. I'm just throwing out numbers here. All right, don't like try and verify whether or not this is actually the percentages that it broke down to. But you get the idea. And there was kind of an accepted percentage that they would tack on for their income, for their services. Well, the thing was that a lot of tax collectors started to kind of push those limits a little bit. And instead of charging 1% or 2% on top of the tax, they would charge 4% or 5%. They were really clever. And if they had paid off the right people in the Roman government, well, then they might charge 10% or 15%. And so the people of the day hated tax collectors. because they were Jewish people who were taking advantage of their Jewish brothers and sisters. So Zacchaeus is a guy who spent most of his life scheming and working to get more. This is a guy who sat up late at night with his TI-81 trying to figure out, you know, what percentage can I wrangle from, you know, the men and women of Jericho? Until one day when Jesus comes to his town. Now, I don't know if Zacchaeus woke up that morning, looked in the mirror, and had one of those moments when he realized that despite all of the chasing that he had done of more, there was still a void in him. I don't know if that happened. I don't know if he had heard stories about Jesus, and in hearing these stories, his heart had started to crack and soften. But that day, when Jesus is coming down the road, he is determined to see him. And so he climbs a tree. He has to get a glimpse. And when Jesus sees him up there in that tree, he says to him, "Come down right now. We've got to get together. I must come to your house." And from that moment on, Zacchaeus' heart is changed. "Here and now," he says, "I will give half of my possessions to the poor. And if I've cheated anybody out of anything," and he has, "I will pay back four times the amount." Part of what Zacchaeus is doing here is making things right. He encounters Jesus and he realizes that he must make things right. And so he's not just going to pay people back, but pay them back four times the amount. But this whole giving away half of his possessions to the poor, that's not required. That's not something that he had to do, but something has gone on in his heart. A man who had held tightly to money and had spent his life trying to figure out how to get more is radically changed. And the result is extravagant generosity. See, Jesus has this effect on people. When you spend time with him, you find your heart being opened to generosity. It's the first point in the bulletin, if you're a note taker, that Jesus opens our heart to generosity. I spent my freshman year of college up at Central Michigan University in an 8-story dorm full of 17 and 18-year-olds. Brilliant on the college's part. I mean, let's just pile all these people into one mega building and let them, you know, burn the place down. That's pretty much, you know, what we did. And I remember getting to the end of my first semester, just sitting in a dorm room one evening. I had an out-of-body experience. The things I was talking about and the way that I was talking about them and the words that I was using sounded a lot like everybody else that was there. And I realized in that moment that I was becoming like all of the people that I was spending time with. And I'm not abdicating responsibility. This was me choosing to kind of let myself be swayed and influenced. But I had this out-of-body experience and I realized, gosh, who you spend time with actually can make a difference. A couple summers later, I moved to Virginia just for the summer because that's where my mom and brothers were living, and I worked on a lawn care crew cutting grass with these two guys, two twin brothers, who were goofy. And, I mean, despite the fact they were in their 30s, they had a great time, loved jokes and, you know, having fun with each other. They also had a really strong southern drawl. And I ended up at the end of that summer looking a lot like them. You know, you spend 10 hours a day with somebody, and it's interesting how they rub off on you. And so I started to really like practical jokes, and I enjoyed finding ways to play them on my brothers. And this change was happening in me. I also started to talk differently. Hey, y'all, I got some sweet tea on the porch. You want to, you know, and it was really interesting. I came back to college, and people were like, "What has happened to you?" You know. Is it any surprise that the more time we spend with Jesus, the more we start to look like him? This happens in all phases and areas of our lives. We spend time with people and they begin to influence and change us. The same is true with Jesus. The more time we spend with him, the more we start to look like him. And I don't know anyone who is more generous than Christ. This is why Jesus opens our heart to generosity. The more time we spend with him, the more our hearts become opened to being generous. I want to suggest a discipline this morning, right? There are two stories and two movements of our heart. There's a couple of disciplines that I think can help fuel that movement. And the first discipline I want to suggest, at the risk of being very obvious, is the discipline of prayer. Specifically, though, I want to talk for just a moment about prayers of thanksgiving. I think this discipline is so important because when you and I spend time offering prayers of thanksgiving, it helps us see just how generous God has been toward us. And I think so often we go through this life from a perspective of scarcity. Anybody else find themselves kind of looking at things from that perspective? Like, I think that's why we often believe that we need more. It's because we don't think we have enough. Right? And when you pause long enough to reflect on what God has given you, and not just the material things that you have, all of the other ways that God has been generous, as you start to make that list, you realize you actually have more than enough. And the appeal and the lure of more starts to wane. It's not quite as shiny as it had been when you start to take stock of how generous God has been towards you. And so here's a couple of things maybe to do this week. A couple of ways to live this out. I want to invite you this week at one of your meals. Doesn't matter which one it is. Just needs to be a meal with at least one other person. Okay? Spend a few minutes while you're eating just sharing things that you're thankful for. A lot like we did here at the beginning. Just verbalize out loud ways that God has been generous towards you. And let that be a simple exercise of spending time with Jesus and reflecting on his goodness and letting that begin to change your heart. It's simple, yeah? Pick a meal this week. Talk with the person you are eating with about ways that God has been generous towards you. Here's another way, a simple way, and you guys can come up with lots of better ideas than this, but here's just a couple of ideas to get the ball rolling. Grab a notebook. Grab a simple notebook this week, and before you go to sleep, just list out the ways in that day that you have seen God be generous toward you. And you may have some days this week where the only things you can name are things like air and food and a place to sleep, because you may have some really, really hard days this week. But spend a few minutes, just every night, 5 minutes, listing out the ways that God has been generous. And when you get to the end of the week, see if your heart hasn't begun to shift a little bit. Because instead of operating from a position of scarcity and fear of not having enough, you will have plenty of evidence that God is good and faithful. And you, in fact, do have enough. And it will free you from the desire for more. So Jesus opens our heart to generosity, and this discipline of prayer can be really helpful in developing that. Here's the thing, though. Here's the second movement. Generosity opens our hearts to Jesus. Matthew 19, if you want to turn there. This is the second story, right? Two stories, two movements of our heart, two disciplines. This is the second movement. The generosity opens our heart to Jesus. Matthew 19, verse 16 is where we're going to start. Just then a man came up to Jesus and asked, Teacher, what good thing must I do to get eternal life? Why do you ask me about what is good? Jesus replied. There's only one who is good. If you want to enter life, keep the commandments. Which ones? He inquired. Jesus replied, you shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not give false testimony. Honor your father and mother and love your neighbor as yourself. All these I have kept. Jesus, look at me. All these I have kept. What do I still lack? And Jesus answered, if you want to be perfect, go sell your possessions and give to the poor. And then you will have treasure in heaven. Then come and follow me. When the young man heard this, he went away sad because he had great wealth. This man is looking for what? Life. Unending life. The kind of life that fills up, overflows, and then spills into eternity. He says, what do I have to do to get that, Jesus? Which, by the way, is a question I think we are all asking. In some way, shape, or we use different words. We might come at it from a different angle. I think, though, that is what we are all after. How do I get that kind of unending, full, overflowing life? And Jesus says to this man, well, obey the commandments. And the guy says, oh, good news, done that. What else do I have to do? And Jesus says two things. One, sell your possessions and give the money to the poor. And then two, don't miss this part. Jesus says, come, follow me. Friends, if you want to have life, you have to follow Jesus. It's maybe obvious or something we don't want to miss that part of the story. It's not just about selling your possessions, Jesus says. In fact, selling his possessions is only a step to get to being able to follow Jesus. Because Jesus knows that if you've given your heart to something else, whatever it is, if your heart is full of a longing and a chasing and a pursuing of something else, there is no room in it for Jesus. Your heart and my heart does not have an unlimited capacity. And if it is full of something else, there's no room. So Jesus says to him, hey, first things first, let go of what you've given your heart to. Let go of that. And if you let go of that, then you will have room in your heart for me. Right? Now, for this guy in this story, the thing that has his heart happens to be money. And we're talking a lot about money in this series, but we're also being very careful to say that this might be something other than money. There are plenty of things that can grab a hold of your heart. Things that you can make your God. For this guy, it was money. And so Jesus says to him, that's what you need to let go of. You need to let go of money so that there is room in your heart for me. And then come follow me and you'll find life. See, Jesus opens our heart to generosity. Spend time with him and you'll find your heart being changed. But the opposite is true too. Choose generosity. Let go of whatever it is that you're clinging tight to, and you will find your heart open to Jesus. They play off of one another. Verse 22 is haunting, though, isn't it? At least for me, it is. When the young man heard this, he went away sad because he had great wealth. I wonder, have you ever walked away from Jesus' invitation? Have you ever heard Jesus say to you, let go of blank, and you walked away because it was too hard? I think it's actually quite easy to do what this guy does in this story. Quite easy to walk away. Quite easy to say, I will be generous when, fill in the blank, when we make more money, then we'll give some, you know, when we buy that, when we've made that purchase, then we'll be free to give some money. You know, when this happens, then we'll be able to be generous. I remember one time in our family's life, things were a little tighter than normal. And I happened at that moment to be the one who wrote a check every Sunday morning to the church we were going to. And I made a decision one Sunday as I was about ready to write a check. We don't have a lot of money. Things are tight. We should probably stop giving for a little while. It seemed like a very rational, even responsible thing for me to do. And then a couple of weeks later, somehow it came up in conversation between Bethany and I that this is what was happening. And, oh boy. She helped me see clearly my ways. And I mean that like in the best sort of way. I remember her saying to me, Chris, you have done exactly the opposite of what you should do. Of what we should, like, the right thing in a moment like this, when things are becoming scarce, is not to cling more tightly to things. It's actually to continue to live generous, thankful lives. And she said, maybe we can't give the dollar amount that we were able to give, you know, last month. But what can we give? What can we give? Are we at least practicing this discipline of generosity? It's so easy to walk away from Jesus' invitation and to tell ourselves that there's this reason why we can't be generous right now, but when this changes, then we'll be generous, right? Which is why I think this discipline that I'm going to want to just chat about for a moment, I think is so important. It's the discipline of consistent giving. And I put that word, when I was preparing this at first, I was just thinking, practice the discipline of giving. And then I added that word consistent in front. Because at least I know for me and for us, there are moments that come up when we have the opportunity to be spontaneously generous, right? You learn of a need that just kind of comes out of the blue, and you have in that moment a chance to respond with generosity. And those are really wonderful moments. But those can come and go, and there can be entire months at a time when those never come up. And so months can pass when there's no real generosity being practiced, if that's how we were to choose to live. And so one of the most important disciplines, I think, at least from my heart, I won't speak for Bethany, but for me, has been finding a way to be consistently generous. And friends, this can look a whole bunch of ways. We actually have just been talking about setting, like taking a little bit of our money every month and just putting it into a separate pot. We tithe that 10%, so we have that all happening, but we've been wanting to be able to be spontaneously generous. And so we've been just pulling a little bit out. You can do this with your bank. This doesn't take any great like work on my part, thank goodness. Just we pull a little bit out, and then there's this money available to be generous. Is that a step for you to take? Years ago, we signed up for Kiva. I'm not tooting Kiva's horn or saying that that's the only way to be consistently generous, but the beauty of Kiva is that it keeps coming back and it gets repaid, and then you have the chance to be generous again and to give more if you choose, and they send you emails to remind you to be generous, and it's actually quite helpful because I need reminders, and so that's maybe a way. What other organizations do you care passionately about? What other organizations are out there doing the work of the kingdom? How could you find a way to be consistently generous? There's no question that the generosity, the consistent generosity of many people here in this community make our life possible. And I am humbled by the way in which so many people here give consistently and generously as they can to this community of people. Are you practicing the discipline of giving? See, Jesus opens our heart to generosity. And generosity opens our heart to Jesus. And the thing I think you see in these two stories is that this beautiful cycle starts to begin to emerge. As you spend time with Jesus, your heart becomes open. And you're able to be generous. And as you're generous, you find yourself drawn to Jesus. And as you're drawn to Jesus, you find your heart being made more open. And this, right, beautiful. The opposite is true, though, too. The more that you hang tightly onto something, the more that greed begins, your heart gets, the door kind of gets opened up to greed. And the more greed sets in, the more tightly that you hang onto something. And the more tightly you hang onto something, the more, right, this really vicious cycle begins to emerge. We are people made and created for the kind of life that Jesus offers us, this unending, filled to the brim, overflowing kind of life. But in order to have that kind of life, we have to choose to let go. And if we choose to let go, we will find that that generosity will change us. And in changing us, it will draw us to Jesus more. And in drawing us to Jesus more, it will change us more. This meal here is a clear sign of the way in which God is generous to us. And I want to invite you this morning as we share it together to eat this bread and to drink from this cup, remembering God's generosity toward you. This is a chance for us to actually practice one of the disciplines from this morning, to practice the discipline of prayer and prayers of thanksgiving. Let this bread remind you